Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And where's Chris?
Yeah, you're probably going to ask about 40 minutes into the episode, where's what's-his-name? Well, Chris is on his honeymoon.
Yeah.
So after perhaps the most abrupt ending in podcast history, where we dashed off to go to the bachelor party, which was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right.
We're back. It is not the next day.
No. Because we wouldn't be able to podcast the next day, even though we considered it.
We did consider it, the day before.
Yeah, the day before.
And then the day of, I didn't really feel like even leaving my house.
I wasn't that bad off, but I like how we were kind of a little bit late to meeting everybody.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of shit because we were doing a podcast.
Yeah, how unimpressed was everybody? Yeah. Here we are, dedicated guys, yeah. And we got nothing.
Yeah, nobody appreciated it.
We just got flat, angry stares.
But, so as you said, I guess we're kind of picking up where we very abruptly left off last time. And this is part two of our Game of Thrones.
Which we've decided to name it as part two.
Yeah, part two or something. So, there'll be a lot of agreeing in this episode because Chris is not here to say, oh, it was awesome! So it's going to be a lot of, yeah. You know, negative.
Well said, Wayne. Well said.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself, Lyle. So you agree wholeheartedly. I agree. So.
But in between part one and part two, I watched Excalibur again.
Okay.
I hadn't seen it at least a decade.
I think I think I've seen it, but I think I was, sorry, Dick. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's 1981.
Yeah. So I think I was one when it came out. I think there's like a famous story around my house about how I was not allowed to go into the Muppet movie theater when I was an infant, yet my parents were somehow able to take me into Excalibur.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. So my parents were able to take me into The Shining.
Yeah.
But I think they promised that they would cover my eyes, and they did. For most of the movie. So I don't really remember The Shining. It's one of those movies where you've kind of seen it, but you haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't really want to go and watch it again. Like it took me decades to watch Godfather again, because I saw it as a kid and didn't understand it.
I
was like, oh yeah, I've seen that.
I had the privilege of being in a mostly Italian or Italian-American fraternity, so that was almost constantly playing at the fraternity house.
Not Goodfellas?
No, well, that too. It was Goodfellas, you know, Godfather, while we all kind of sat around eating, you know, pasta. So, anyway. But,
yeah, Excalibur is pretty visually, pretty visually stunning, actually. And it's a kind of ahistorical, it takes place in the Dark Ages, but they're walking around in full plate armor, and walking around and having sex in full plate armor. Felt that it helped you buy into the legend of King Arthur.
And
the romance of King Arthur.
And I think it's important to bring up kind of that's what King Arthur is. It's a legend, so I don't know. Part of me thinks that it wouldn't have worked as well if they try to make it, you know, quote unquote real and gritty. And so
when we look at the Game of Thrones, it is very well, I mean, Excalibur is pretty gory, pretty violent. And I would say it is pretty gritty, and they used little devices such as when the realm is at peace, the knight's armor is like real polished silver and just sparkles. Whereas when they were fighting to unite the realm, or when you see the bad guys later on, they have a black armor.
Oh, really?
And they really contrast that. And actually, when I was reading a Game of Thrones and thinking about when they wear the very ornate and elaborate armor, I kind of would think back to, you know, my childhood memories of watching Excalibur and how that looked. So when they, you know, in the Kingsguard in Game of Thrones, they've opted for a more
utilitarian approach.
Sure. Or like with elements of like the Roman armor, I would say there. But even like the simple touches like that really helps you buy into it. And of course, like a Game of Thrones, because Martin's based it off of War of the Roses, and it is trying to make it really fairly grounded in
reality,
in that, you know, all of the battles are going to be fought between thousands of men at arms,
right.
Not individual knights. So they don't have the freedom that, let's say, Excalibur did. So they when you watch Excalibur, the only people fighting are guys in full plate. So you have a very small groups of men fighting each other, but it didn't seem as, let's say, I hesitate to say, but ridiculous as watching like a very tiny horde. Hordes shouldn't be tiny. The Dothraki horde.
It was more like a Dothraki gathering.
Gathering, yeah. But if it was Excalibur, and it could have been like seven Blood Riders. Mm. And when those seven Blood Riders cross the sea, wow, because the only people that are going to be facing them is another seven guys or seven champions or something. And when King Arthur rides out towards the end, the movie's quite old, so I'm not spoiling anything. And of course, the legend's even older. When he rides out and there's like 11 knights or 10 knights following him, it doesn't look silly.
Mm.
But they also make use of darkness, and we're going to touch on that later.
Yeah, yeah.
When we get into general elements of a Game of Thrones, is they make use of darkness and fog to really hide, how many people are there and the true scope of the battle. So it helps to kind of confine your vision to those individuals.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like with.
So I thought that was really well done. Of course, it's 81, so it's CG's. It's pre-Tron, maybe. I don't know when Tron came out.
Pre-Tron, yeah.
Yeah.
So they definitely wouldn't have been able to do knights and armor in CG, even if they had the CG ability, right?
Unless they were like green Hexel.
But now I was going to say, kind of like, I haven't made movies, but kind of with any movie, it's almost, or series, it's almost like the smaller budget you have, the more creative you get with what you're able to work with. So you have to kind of not take shortcuts. And yeah, I agree. Sometimes like low budget can look low budget, but then other times, low budget actually looks pretty good because the creative people realize the limitations and say, okay, we can't show that, so we'll have to show it a different way.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it really works. So
yeah.
Even in anything, like I'm a Red Dwarf fan, and I'm sure that was extremely low budget, to the point where a lot of the like whole episodes are just filmed like in a single room on a spaceship, but it works.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So where did we leave off in part one?
I think I was complaining about I think you had suggested best scenes, and I immediately launched into worst scenes. So.
Yeah, and I mentioned that my favorite scenes in the book, they seem to have cut out.
Yes.
Every single one. But that's not true.
Almost like they picked your brain and said, all right, what does Lyle want to see? So we cannot show him that.
But one of my favorite scenes was when, Cyril Forel, the sword master.
Yeah.
The first sword of Braavos. Yeah. Has a showdown with some Lannister guards and one of the Kingsguard. Mm. And they showed that. And that happened to be the episode that Martin wrote.
That was episode 8.
Episode 8. And yeah, it was good. It was well done.
Yeah.
Well, I love that. And I loved how they cut away at the end.
Yep.
So you don't see Pharrell go down. You shouldn't see Pharrell go down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's arguably one of the most exciting or best scenes in the book. And my pessimistic nature watching kind of a Game of Thrones, the series, seeing as how it was so different from my expectations, I was kind of worried that they would either not show that
or have
Jamie Lannister pop up. He's in every other freaking scene. But yeah, I agree. That's one of the scenes that I was like, okay, you know what? That was pretty good.
They could have had Pharrell beat the, what is it? Trant? I think it's
Trant. Yeah, it's Trant.
And then Lannister comes in and goes, try me on, size, Pharrell.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'd been a little ragged cheer among the audience. Yeah. Take him down, Jamie.
Well, but that was episode 8. Was that episode 8? No. The
wolf episode.
No, it must have been a previous episode where Jamie Lannister and Ned Stark fight, which I thought was incredibly dumb.
Yeah.
I really didn't like that.
No, I didn't. But well, let's... Oops, continue on the positive for a moment, because we do have some scenes that we think that are even worse than the one we dubbed the worst in part one.
Yeah.
But also the Viserys.
Yes.
Getting his crown of gold, which is a really good scene in the book. And of course, because Harry Lloyd, the guy playing Viserys, is did such a fantastic job, and it was a good, I guess, good end for him. You know, his final scene as an actor. So it was good that they did that justice.
Yeah.
And just, you know, he's talking about how they use darkness and Excalibur to kind of draw your eyes to who you should be looking at.
Right.
And to kind of hide the background. And even make it more sinister.
Yeah.
They actually use darkness, which they haven't done enough of in Game of Thrones.
No, they haven't.
They actually use the darkness to kind of hide that there's really not a lot of people in the tent.
Yeah.
And the tent's not that big. And you do feel bad for Viserys because you're supposed to feel bad. And there's not much of a spoiler, but when Dany thinks about Viserys, like her points of view, you see two sides of that character. You don't just see the monster
that he became,
but you also know why he became that.
Yeah, I think that's part
so
of
the reason. So there, you have to have the actor sell it, so that you gotta give him the opportunity to sell that.
And he did.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the reason why I enjoy the book series so much, or hopefully the TV series as well, is because, like, basically all the characters feel real.
Yeah.
You know, because, when we first meet Viserys, he's this pretty despicable guy, you know, the fact that, he essentially sold his own sister, and there's a couple lines in there, you know, I'll let Drogo and his entire horde fuck you if I have to.
And right? The horses.
And the horses too. And you're like, the thing is, again, in the series, it was one of those things, like, it wasn't a growly threat. He was practically smiling when he said it. And you're like, that guy's creepy.
Yep.
Right? But then you find out why, kind of.
Yep.
You know, like, right before he dies, like, all I wanted kind of like was respect, and nobody ever gave it to me. And so how else could he have turned out, really? You know,
but he doesn't have like a whole big monologue in which to do that. So it's a combination of Dany thinking back to what Viserys was, and also, you know, the characterization when you know his lines at the end.
Yep.
And so Harry Lloyd had to, you know, do all of that with both. They gave him that extra scene when he was talking again with the
exposition.
Yeah, the Morris exposition in the bath, just to kind of, there's kind of explaining like the history of the dragons and stuff.
Yeah.
But
so
they gave him a little bit there, but mostly.
No, I agree. The darkness really sold the Dothraki horde on that one, because I think the first time in the series we saw the Khalasar, I'm like, that's pretty small.
Yeah.
And I hope they show more people, and they never really did. So that's why we keep saying the small horde, which is, you know, try and put air quotes around that word horde, which it doesn't really work.
But yeah, so when you see the remains of the horde at the end, you're kind of, whoa, so?
Yeah, like, it's almost a shame that both of us, and I guess all three of us, including Chris, have read the books, because we can't really look at the TV series with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
So would someone who was seeing a Game of Thrones for the first time, would they know that the horde is gone in that ending scene? I don't know. Possibly not.
Yeah, you know? They've just, like, some people have left.
Yeah, some people have left. Where in reality, in the book, like, 95% of the people are just gone. And the only people she's left with are sort of young boys, old crippled men, and sick people.
Yeah.
That's all she has. And the people looked pretty fit. But anyway.
Or as fit as they were before.
Or as fit as they were before, yeah, exactly.
Nobody looks less fit.
Well, I'm not going to beat this dead horse anymore, but anyway. So.
Any other scenes? Because I know we've been talking, after we've talked about Loras and Renly, and maybe because we had talked about that so much, about what they've done to Renly's character, but there was one scene in episode 10 with Pycelle, and some people have, I think this is, I don't know if this is split people, but some people have said, oh, that shows how clever
Pycelle
is, because he's put on his, like, doddering fool act, and he's really a lot sharper and a lot
more physically fit.
More physically fit than he's actually letting on. And I didn't actually like the scene, because I touched on it in part one, is like, even the prostitute is bored with what he's saying. And, you know, I was just bored with what he was doing.
Yeah, I was.
And then he gets up and he does his, like, little calisthenics.
Yeah.
And
straightens his robe.
Straightens up.
and then hunches down before he goes.
Yeah, outside. And you're like, but, and you're saying, okay, so I understand what they're trying to do with the scene. Mm. They're trying to show that there's more to Picel than he's letting on. But Right. Four books in, is Picel some mastermind? Because when he has an opportunity, not to spoil anything, but when he has an opportunity to kind of
show how clever he is,
or like in the kind of the arena that Littlefinger and Varys play at, he shows that he's not up for it.
No.
And when he has an opportunity to show that he's smarter than another character, he's basically opposing some pretty dumb and some pretty foolish ideas and decisions. So it's not as if he's kind of three steps ahead of this person. He's like two
steps behind.
Right, where the reader is like, why is this character doing that? Mm. That is so dumb. So when Picel says, oh, maybe that's not the greatest thing to do, he doesn't come across as terribly clever. He's kind of...
Yeah.
Comes across as somebody that can spot the obvious.
Hmm. Yeah, so, like even when he says, yeah, oh, that might not be the best idea, you're like, man, even Picel is saying it, so you know it's freaking dumb.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that should give you pause.
Yeah. So like, wait, hold on. Even he said it's dumb? Maybe we better not do it. So
either I've read those four books a few times and just not picked up on what a...
Sharp guy Picel is.
What a sharp guy Picel is. And I'm not saying he's stupid. I mean, no. he's a grandmaster. And he's got a lot of knowledge in that. But you wouldn't say he was on par with Littlefinger or Tyrion or Varys. No. As far as, in terms of cunning. Or Martin has said, he is really gonna sharpen up. Mm. Or he's gonna reveal his kind of, his true nature. So why don't we kind of tip it in season one?
Right.
And it's the same with Tyrion, is where I get the impression that Tyrion is, if not Martin's favorite character.
Probably is.
And his top two.
Right.
And he's got a love affair with this Tyrion. And after this, it's really obvious that it's especially after the first book, that just, you know, what a great guy Tyrion is. And I found in season one, they've kind of just,
you know, shown that already.
Shown that a lot more than they were in the first book. It's just like, hey, you want somebody to root for? Well, here's Tyrion.
Yeah, here's Tyrion.
Yeah. He's one of the good ones. The big shock is that who you probably think is the main character then is gone after the first season.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Spoiler. What we said we would spoil that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're reading the book or watching the series for the first time, if you hadn't read the book, that is a shock, what happens to Ned Stark.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Yeah, like the first time I read it, I'm like, so the book's done, and we still have like 3/4 left, and there's more books after this?
And I was thinking, great, it's all Bran now. Bran Stark. Oh, man, it's a series about a kid? So.
I was going to say, well, I guess, like I had been saying before, this kind of brings us to like a, I guess another possible bad scene is how, Tyrion's a little bit too nice, in my opinion, especially with Shay.
Shay.
Mm. So after Shay comes in, and I said, like, I don't know what they did with her, because in the book, she's supposed to be, I don't know how to describe it, she's not naive, because she knows a lot of stuff that's going on, but she can play naive really well, is my impression of her. And
she can play sexy.
Yeah.
She knows her role in the world.
Yeah.
She understands it. She sees an opportunity to expand that role. And actually, that was always unclear, is just how much she really thinks she can kind of move up.
Right.
But she certainly tries.
Yeah, she definitely tries.
But she is, of all the characters, now, reading the book, I didn't really find it. In the book, she's 13, so maybe this is a good
thing. I thought she was a little bit older than that.
No, I'm talking about Dany.
Oh, okay.
So in the book, Dany is 13.
Right.
So, and maybe this is probably a good thing to say, I never really considered her as like a real sexual character, although she does get pregnant in that. Now, when they've cast Emilia Clarke as Dany, wow, like, stunning. She is gorgeous. Cersei's beautiful.
Right.
Sansa's a budding beauty, because she's quite young in the book as well. And like turns out too. In the series as well. She's only 16. She's only 16. But Shay is pure sex appeal.
Yes.
She is like sex personified.
Yeah.
And she knows how to use that. So she's, mm-hmm. from the very first scene in the book, she's dripping sex. Now, I don't know about, you know, maybe this kind of says something about my tastes in women, but someone who's very surly.
Yes, yes.
You know, and kind of telling you.
Combative.
Combative. You know, that's not that's oozing not sex. That's not oozing sex. That's, you might find that quite, maybe that's great for a partner. You know, because, you know, a strong woman, an aggressive woman. But I'm sure if you were higher, unless you are an M on the SNM and you like a dominatrix, you're probably not going to pick somebody. Go get me a camp follower, a camp whore. Get someone who's going to tell me no a lot.
That not always bothered me because it hasn't been for a long time.
I want to pay for sex with somebody that's going to give me conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
On what's going to happen.
So, like, I kept saying, like, book Tyrion, yeah. while nice, would not have put up with that shit.
Yeah.
Like, in the couple scenes, he'd be like...
At least in the first... at least in the first book.
Yeah, at least in the first book. Like,
you would kind of seen Bronn bring her in, given she would have given some lip,
right.
Tyrion go, Bronn, and then there would have been some sort of discussion on what he likes in a whore, and it's not what he brought
yeah,
in.
It's not that.
It's not right? that. Take this.
Yeah.
And something different.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, any of the scenes with Shay, and sort of, I know we'll get into it a little bit, but physical looks aside for the actress they chose for Shay, the character is dead wrong that they wrote for her.
I always picture like a Phoebe Cates or a Jessica Alba, but then that's, to me, those are very attractive women.
But that's kind of what she's supposed to be.
Right, but I'm sure everybody's kind of picked. I think she's a brunette.
I think so too.
So everybody's probably picked like their number one brunette, and would cast that. And that's the kind of sexual creature she is in the book. It's like you're gonna pick the most beautiful brunette that you've seen.
And, yeah,
and she's not for wherever the hell.
Yeah,
she's
I don't know where they got that foreign crap from.
You're not into the foreigners, are you?
I didn't mean that. But no, it's like...
She's clearly from Westeros, the Seven Kingdoms, in the book. She's coy about her background.
Yeah, keyword there being coy. Not but combative, coy.
Yeah, she doesn't shut it down. She kind of plays it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're talking... So the Have You Ever... I don't know if anybody's ever played the drinking game Have You Ever, which is basically what Tyrion does.
Yes.
And when you've got your number one... The number one fan of the series among us is Chris.
Yeah.
And as soon as that...
Not the book series, yeah.
Yeah, the TV series.
Yeah.
And as soon as that scene starts, he's like, you can leave now, Bronn.
Yeah.
And he just completely cut that scene up with just that one line. And we were just laughing. Because it is kind of... Yeah, what's Bronn doing there? It's like, what, you pay for a prostitute and you got your...
And you're drinking with the guy.
Yeah. You know, I like... Yeah. And then you're doing a game, and then he sets up the game, and I'm like, oh no, he's not doing Have You Ever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say something, and if I'm wrong, I gotta drink.
If I get it right, you gotta drink.
So who wants to watch that when they watch a Game of Thrones? Really, is that the best game or activity that you can have them do? They can't just sit there and drink and say, tell me a bit about yourself?
You know, this is the one time, the one scene, where I think I would have preferred the sex position as opposed to what we got. Because it just feels so...
And not with Bronn, but...
Yeah, not with Bronn, even though that's what would have happened. But, yeah, just... I don't know, it just doesn't work, because...
And then why would Tyrion... Yeah. He sets up the game because, what, he wants to find out all about Bronn's life?
No.
Because Shay completely shuts him down.
Yeah.
And says, no, I'm not going to do this game. Oh, okay, great.
I don't want to play.
Normally, a guy would go, oh, okay, I guess I'm really... Okay, let's just drink, or let's not play the game.
Well, no, correction. No. A normal guy... who's on a date would have said, okay, we'll do something else. Someone who paid for a whore said, I paid you. You'll do what the fuck I say. And I don't condone prostitution, but that's what would have happened. Right?
Well, it kind of gets into, it's like, if you are paying for a prostitute, you kind of...
Not that I know what
you don't have
like.
To. If you take them for dinner, that's nice. You don't have
you don't,
to.
You don't have
to. Don't have to take them to the movie. That's kind of the point.
Yeah otherwise it's
exactly.
A
date. And okay, yeah, absolutely. Now, if you were on a date and somehow there was her brother or some guy is there, and she doesn't want to play the game, which, so you would not go, great, because I really just want to find out more about
this
Bronn.
Guy. Yeah. You just sit there and look
Bronn,
silly.
You must have had a fascinating life, yeah. And it And what was that supposed to do? To show that Tyrion can't read people?
Yeah.
Because he seems to get all his answers wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, that's going to pay off in the subsequent seasons. He just misreads people left and right?
Yeah. Because he's not supposed to. He's kind of supposed to be, you know, pretty smart. The only thing it was there is for him to tell the audience about his first marriage.
Which
he could have done any other way, including sex position.
Yeah.
Which would have been better.
He could have had a scene with Jamie. I mean, they're paying for Walder Costas to be Jamie.
That would have been
Jamie.
A lot better.
Yeah, it's like...
Even though that comes up later in the... I think that's important. It comes up later in the series.
Yeah, but they could have, like... He could have just said, yeah. Oh, Jamie, remember this? And
yeah.
Jamie's like, yeah, I remember that.
Could have done it with anything else.
Anyway, he could have told Robert.
He could have been talking to one of the wolves. What? Oh, the non-existent wolves.
So I would have to say, although because the Loras and Renly scene, I thought was very good for Loras.
Not so good for Renly.
And then there's actually nothing wrong with the scene. It's just what they've done to Renly's character. Yes. So you can basically say every time you see Renly.
And what they did to Renly? Want to know what happened to Renly? Loras bit down before he finished emasculating him.
He must have done it prior to the series starting. Yeah, but at least you had... It was a decent scene. The guys were acting well. And the Loras characterization, I think, is really good. And to make that more explicit. Because I don't think what they've done with Loras in the books... It wouldn't work for the series. It wouldn't work for a TV series because it wouldn't be explicit enough. And a lot of it's in people's heads.
Right.
And they make sly comments about Loras. But you wouldn't get that Loras is gay.
Yeah, you're not sure.
You wouldn't shout it in the middle of a tournament like Littlefinger
style.
Littlefinger style, which kind of is inconsistent with him saying he was discreet
subtle.
And subtle. Yeah, so, except when it comes to Renly.
Queen Renly.
I mean that you're gay, yeah. Renly.
So, all right, so I guess you want to go on to some more internal inconsistencies. Like you said, Littlefinger saying he is subtle and discreet and yelling from the grandstands that Renly's gay.
Well, first we're going to talk about some general things. So there are going to be some positive things as well. But one of the things that, it's a TV series, which is going to be different than a book. You got to understand that. But at least they should be internally consistent.
Right.
And a good example would be...
I was going to say, the first one we thought of was when Littlefinger tells Ned Stark to meet him.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So the scene where Jaime confronts Ned Stark about Tyrion getting captured.
Yes.
Now, it does take place outside of a brothel,
right.
But it takes place at night, and I believe it's raining.
Yes, in the book, it's at night, and it's raining.
Right. And Jaime's on horseback, and I believe Jaime's on horseback, but most of the guards are not.
Yep, most of the guards are on foot.
And Ned is, and Jory, and his guards are on horseback.
Yes.
Okay, so they made some changes. So it's now takes place during the day. Right. It's not rain. It's very sunny.
Right.
Everybody's on foot. Yep. And I think
Jaime had, maybe Jaime had a horse.
No, Jaime does have a horse in the book. Oh, does he have a horse?
I think maybe he has... Maybe the combat takes place all on foot.
Yeah.
But he kind of gets off.
Okay.
Because I think he rode up, and we all said, wow, he looks like a Disney prince in that white thing.
Oh, yes,
thing
he's wearing...
The
yeah,
white
that,
horse
yeah, I did not... Like, don't like that jacket.
No.
Do not like that jacket.
Anyway,
all.
So...
Yeah, he looks like a Disney prince.
there are some changes from the book.
Right. But you can accept that. Okay. You would think that probably the rain, if you don't want to set up the rain machine,
right.
At least probably could have filmed at night because it can hide things.
Yeah, as we said, it would have been kind of good to.
But if you made a decision, then no, it would work best at during the day. Then that's fine. It's not like it didn't work during the day.
Right.
But as you were saying, Wayne, it's like earlier in the
about 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah, 5 minutes earlier.
If even that.
Littlefinger says, "Meet me tonight."
Or right now.
Yeah, or now.
Yeah.
Yeah, or high noon.
Yeah.
So it's as if the writer wrote that scene and no one bothered to then fix it. It's like they wrote the scene because they're following the book and then somebody's like, "Nah, let's just do it during the day. Let's just get
do it now."
And it's no one bothered to say, "Hey, this guy, we got a line here that says meet me tonight."
And it's daytime.
And if you could explain about the ritual.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. So then the other one that's really obvious is when the Magi, Miri Mazdur, starts the ritual to, you know, bring Khal Drogo back to life. And again, in the book, maybe she tells Danny in the afternoon, or I forget exactly when she tells
Danny. She's gotta set it up.
She sets it up. But the whole thing is, it's supposed to be at night, so you see all these weird shadows coming from the inside of the tent.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's supposed to happen at night. Or at least it does in the book. So, again, wouldn't have minded them changing it to the daytime, which they did. But,
and you would have said, yeah, oh, I wish it was at night,
yeah,
because I could have seen
night,
the shadows. But all
it
right.
works. Okay. However, Miri Mazdor has a line that says, the shadows will dance here tonight.
Yeah.
Or right now. Because then in the series, she brings in the horse, kills the horse, and I said, oh, they're starting the ritual now? And then, oh, well, maybe it's a long ritual. Right? Like, maybe there's going to be a long setup, and we'll see them go into the tent at night, and nope, Jorah just picks Danny up, and into the tent they go during high noon, and I said, what the hell?
Within the scene, I wonder if people who hadn't read the book were like, watching it, because it's, yeah, okay, I need a horse, brings the horse right in,
like,
and then it goes,
the
yeah, the shadows are going to dance tonight, and then just cuts the horse throat right there, and it's like, okay.
yeah, that was the other thing. Like, so they ripped the tent open to bring in the horse when there was a door right on the other side.
So, yeah, I didn't really get that. Or also, and it's a very powerful scene, where, and it's when the dragons appear.
Yes.
But they actually had that starting at night. And then she walks into the fire.
Yes.
And my impression in the book, it didn't take that long because it happens pretty quickly and she kind of walks out. But they thought, well, you know, it would take a long time, I guess, for the Dragon Age to have whatever the rationale was.
Or for Khal Drogo to burn. I don't know. Yeah.
I wouldn't think if you're Khaleesi, your leader, walked into fire, I don't think you would then, even if it took a long time, fall asleep. Because, or, if you're Jorah Mormont, who's her, like, her first Queen's Guard.
Yeah,
and her first sword. I don't think you'd kind of walk wherever he went. Because, because at the scene, she walks into the fire at night. Scene cuts away to the morning. The fire's died down. Everybody's asleep.
Yeah.
Jorah comes walking back from wherever.
Somewhere.
With the other Blood Riders, all her protectors. I guess everybody got bored of watching her burn to death. I don't know. So I was like, is she buried under ash or something? Did they just think, oh, she must have just burned up and we're all so sad? I don't know. But then they kind of walk back nonchalant.
Yeah.
And it turns out there she is, not covered in anything, just kind of naked. So,
well, she was covered in a dragon.
Covered in dragon.
Strategically placed dragons.
That's so boring, you'd fall asleep? It's like, whoa, I cannot keep my eyes open.
Well, I was like, I think something just came out of that egg, but I'll deal with it in the morning.
Isn't that kind of a spectacular thing? Is this ritual, or like her burning Khal Drogo, her walking into the fire, which you think is insane, and everybody kind of gets bored with it and falls asleep, and Jorah Mormont kind of walks away and does whatever?
I think that's a case where possibly the budget let... I'm not going to say the budget let them down, but...
Having sleeping actors is cheaper than awake
actors? No. I was going to say, like...
I don't mind them saying that took forever, but you wouldn't have, like, people just kind of crying or Jorah just devastated. But whatever, everybody's still fixated on the fire because that's spectacular. Why did she go into the fire? And you would stay fixated.
Yeah.
She never screamed. Oh, by the way, she's still right there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like
I said, she's not covered in anything.
Yeah.
It's not like she breaks out of the, like, ashes.
Yeah.
Or something.
So, like, Jorah couldn't see her from wherever he had walked away to. Like, turns around, oh, she's right there. Hey, she's okay. Let's run over and check. Because, well, I don't know.
Did he even run?
He didn't.
He couldn't because there was too many sleeping people in the way. He had to walk, step over them. Was he hungry or something?
Maybe he went to go see if the eggs were finished cooking.
Hey, who took those dragon eggs? I was going to have some.
Dragon omelet.
Yeah, so there's some internal inconsistencies that has nothing to do with adapting it from a book.
Because as we said, you could have done it the way they did it in the book, or you could have done it a different way.
Yeah.
Both scenes would have, well, except for the dragon thing, you know, they would have worked equally well in day or night, but... Yeah, it's like you said, like, somebody wrote it wrote the scene the way it kind of was in the book. They decided to film a different way and didn't change the dialogue or didn't tell people that they had
changed. Yeah, it's kind of like the director said, okay, he says, like, yeah, the shadows are going to dance tonight. Yeah. Seems to be we cut away to another scene. Okay, we'll just have you cut the horse's throat now. Should I change the light? Nah, you know, that was a good take. Yeah, just
Can they see the shadows during high noon?
Maybe. I guess. I guess there's shadows during the day.
I guess. Anyway.
Another general impression is just what a fantastic job they've done with the castles.
Yes.
The wall, it was in the prologue, and every time you see Castle Black and the wall, it's looked fantastic.
Yes.
Although Winterfell is different than I imagined, it's rounder.
Different than I imagined. Yep.
But it still looks really impressive.
Yes.
The Eyrie was definitely going to be a challenge.
It is what it is. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get the way gates on the way up to the Eyrie.
Yeah, I can see that. I wonder if we're going to get them later on.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it would
actually be much later on.
I can understand why they didn't do it, you know?
Yeah.
It still looks impressive.
It's tough to visualize.
Yeah.
And when you see the Twin Towers in the series, it may sound silly that I said, even though I found those tough to visualize.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Because
the scale, I understood what it was, but I didn't understand how big they were. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I imagined. Yeah,
I never pictured the bridge between the two towers being as long as it was.
Yeah.
But
I guess if it was an easy thing to cross, then.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, exactly.
Because that's where all their power comes from, is that crossing.
Yeah.
And I'm really going to look forward to when they get to the Iron Isles, Iron Islands.
Yeah, Pike.
Pike's going to be really...
That could be a tough one, because if I remember correctly, Pike is kind of not a bunch of towers, but it's several towers on several small spires of rock.
You know? I've seen what they did is, I think it's a place in Greece, where the areas, and they just take, of course there's no castle there, and they just CG'd the castle, and it looked fine. So what they'll probably do is they'll have like some like kind of outcropping, like rocks going out into the water, and just kind of CG the castle there.
Which would be fun.
And then they'll probably do like a little rope bridge scene.
Yeah, hopefully it's a rope bridge because that's what it is. It's a rope bridge. And I was going to say...
But from looking at season one, I have a lot of confidence in how they're going to do that. I know some people have, and you've said that King's Landing looks a little bit Mediterranean.
Yeah.
But when they did the big shot of King's Landing, outside the far left.
Yeah,
I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, I thought it looked great. It's not that I don't like the way the internal part of King's Landing looked. It's just I never expected it to look so Mediterranean with like sand everywhere. I guess I didn't, because I
can't say I had a real clear idea. Because Robert talks about how hot it is and everybody's wearing silk. So it does actually sound, at least in what people are wearing, very Mediterranean. But then when you think about Dorne, or you think about Braavos and that, or the other places that Dany goes, they seem very Mediterranean or Greek or even Turkish.
Even in terms of like, kind of heat and the color of the stone and what kind of stone they use. Like, if that's the way King's Landing look, I think I joked that Dorne's just going to be a vast expanse of desert.
Well, a lot of it is.
Well, I agree a lot of it is, but it's kind of like, okay, you made King's Landing look that way.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the way I would have expected Dorne to look a little bit. So what's Dorne going to look like now when we get to it?
Just tense.
wouldn't that be Dothraki?
I don't know. Yeah.
But, no, I like the castles. I was a little bit worried about the way the inside of the twins looked like. Only because when we first see the inside of the twins, when Catelyn is kind of conferring with Walder Frey, it's a very tight shot, and there are kind of pillars blocking everything, and it made the inside of the castle look absolutely tiny, at least to me. And I was kind of worried and that it wouldn't look kind of as big as I had thought it should be. But then the camera pans around and the space opens up and I said, phew, thank God. It actually looks okay. Well,
I like the guy they got for Walder Frey too.
He's younger than I imagined.
Well, he stood up.
Yeah.
And walked, which is, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But he's got the voice. And it's like when we talked about the last episode, Yoren.
Yes. Yep.
He has the voice, and that's more important.
Yeah.
Where actually the guy who plays the Hound, Rory McCann, mm-hmm. I think I kept calling him Rory McCain last time, Rory McCann, he doesn't seem to have that raspy voice.
Well,
he's kind of got a normal voice, whereas the Hound, you always imagine his voice sounds like what?
They always talk about like
sand
like,
over they talk steel. About
like, yeah, but I think it's one of those things like, how would you do that apart from computer, right, or post-production?
Auto-tune. Well, or you could do what Christian Bale did for Batman. That's a bit ridiculous.
I'm the Hound.
I'm Batman.
But, I agree, because they always talk about how raspy the Hound's voice is, but I think that's one of the concessions you just kind of have to make, and it actually doesn't bother me all that much.
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And the same with Walder Frey. They got the voice.
Right.
He kind of looks like Walder Frey.
So
if they want to make...
Looks kind of old enough, I guess.
Yeah, walk around. Yeah, that's fine.
He did walk around kind of feebly, you know. But, yeah.
You want to talk about the wolves?
The lack of the wolves? So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm of two minds.
I don't know. Did they know how to film them? Because there's that one scene with Arya and...
Nymeria.
And it's clearly the wolf's not in the same room at some point. Because it's like her... She talks to Nymeria, then it switches to just the dog looking at the camera.
Right.
And it even looks like a different film stock.
Oh, you're talking about when she chucks the rock at Nymeria to chase her away. Or are you talking about when she's packing. And I did notice that.
And the dog just kind of sits, so, and then switches to her, and she's packing away, and then it says something to Nymeria, and then switches to Nymeria, and again, it's just like her sitting there. It could be even the same shot.
I did notice that there's a bed pillar. A bedpost, almost in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
And the camera kind of pans around it, and Nymeria kind of walks, you know, past the pillar, and she's at such a height where the bed covers her. So it could be a composite shot where, you know, they had the dog walk behind the bed as they panned the camera around, mm-hmm. and then they did another shot where they panned the camera around the same way on a track and had the I forget her name, that the actress who plays Arya acting, and then they composite it in, you know, post-production. So... Yeah. But, I don't know, similar to, like the Dothraki horde, you either have to not show them,
yeah,
or show them a lot. It kind of doesn't work as a middle ground, and that's kind of what it feels to me, and it's just kind of not working.
And I'm wondering if they could, you know, I know the Dire Wolf is the sigil for
House Stark,
but could you just change it to Wolf?
Yeah,
and just say they're wolves?
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, we found wolves.
Or you could have written it in a way...
That's pretty, pretty spectacular.
Yeah. You could have said, yeah.
Who has a tame wolf?
Nobody.
Right, so...
And you could have said, the Dire Wolf is a sigil of House Stark. Wolves are creatures of the North. Hey, look, there's some wolves. Close enough. You know? I mean, not say it that way, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Well, it's like, it's not like Robb Stark gets the nickname the Young Dire Wolf.
No.
It's the Young Wolf. I mean, they kind of shorten it a lot to wolves. Because what are they going to do? Because they've got wolf hybrids or wolves, whatever they're using right now.
I don't know what they're using.
Dire wolves don't exist. Are they going to like CG this monstrous dog?
I don't know
what they're going to do. Obviously, they're having enough trouble just with them as young dire wolves, and therefore full-grown wolves. So what are you going to do when they get older? Are you going to just keep saying, that he's going to be so big when he's old?
Yeah, and then...
When that's full-grown, that's going to stop looking like a wolf.
When do they get full-grown? Oh, about 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then he'll really stop looking like a wolf and look like a dire wolf. He'll also be with me more.
So I was going to say, episode 8 is the one that Martin writes. And before we had watched, I'm like, okay, I bet you there's going to be a lot of wolves in it.
Yeah.
And there were. Episode 8 is like, has the most wolves of any episode.
He'll be like, yeah, you guys must have missed it. But the wolves are actually important.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of represent something.
You know, yeah.
I'm not just talking about dire wolves here, guys.
Who wrote the book? Me? Yeah, there's a reason I wrote a wolf pup for each of the Stark kids and Jon Snow.
Did you kind of get that? No? Yeah. No? All right. Now we're going to get some wolves.
And I think maybe I've said it on a previous podcast, or maybe I said it to you guys, how I didn't really like how Bran woke up when Lady was killed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have since changed my opinion, because... Yeah. But again, like, they're not showing the wolves enough to show that the wolves are important. But then, they are, and they kind of did a little bit of that by having Bran open his eyes when Lady died. Kind of... It made a connection between kind of the wolves and him. So I rescind that comment.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm fine with the no Bran dreams.
I don't know. What they're doing is kind of satisfying me. I guess enough. But
the only thing is, I don't. His name is Summer. Oh, why? Yeah.
that hasn't come up.
Yeah, his name is Summer. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. It's almost one of those, like, you couldn't write them out of the story, but you're kind of not showing them enough.
So any predictions for season 2?
In terms of wolves or just in general?
Just in general. Predictions without doing any spoilers.
Maybe we discussed it last episode, but I think they're going to have Renly almost do a 180. Kind of knowing what has to happen, and there's a little hint of that in the first series. Yeah, they're going to have to toughen him up somehow.
Yeah.
Or else it's just not going to be believable.
I think they're going to have less whores. And I think when they do the cast for season 2, I think a decision, and it's no disrespect against the actress, but the one that plays the turnip cart whore.
I believe that character's name is Roz.
If they go, wow, she's now going to be,
not there.
In season 2, I think a lot of people will go, oh. They're just grown.
Unless she dies in the first episode.
Yeah.
Because again, yeah, nothing against the actress. I'm sure she's a fine actress. But the sex position doesn't work. It's kind of insulting. And yeah, as you said, a lot of people have complained about it, critics included.
Right. So I think they're going to have less of that.
Yeah, hopefully they'll wise up and not do that.
Yeah.
Show other ways of feeding us the history, you know? It's kind of like, I don't know, like, people have said before, maybe we said it on the
Here's the big
podcast.
Challenge yeah. is they've moved a scene, like a pretty major scene, or part of it, from book 2, towards the end of book 2.
Mm.
And they moved it, and it was with Jamie, and they moved it to the end of season 1.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because when the scene started, both you and I looked at each other and said, oh no.
And we were worried, because it happens at the end, so are they going to accelerate his storyline?
I don't know.
So I don't know what they're going to do with Jamie for the. I can't make a prediction, because I would have predicted normally. It's like Jamie really doesn't make an appearance in the second book until the end.
Right.
So now they've already kind of started the process. So what are they going to do? Is they going to kind of accelerate that part of the storyline?
I don't know. But kind of like so for book 1, like the Whispering Woods doesn't happen like if you broke the book into the kind of episodes, right?
Yeah.
The Whispering Wood where Jamie gets captured happens, what, like episode 9?
In
the TV series? Yeah. And if you went into the book, it really happened more around like episode 7.
Hmm.
It doesn't happen as close to the end. And for the remainder of the book, Jamie is gone.
Yep.
He's not there.
And then book 2 starts.
Book 2 starts and he's not there.
He continues to be not there.
Yeah. So.
They're actually going to show something that they only talk about then. There's something that Tyrion sets up for Jaime.
Mm.
This is actually only for people who've read it.
Yeah.
If we're going to maybe get our vague illusions here. But they will show that.
Yeah.
Tyrion's plan, they will show it unfolding and they'll kind of elevate that.
Right.
Because they're going to have to.
Yeah. To give Jaime something
at the beginning. Yeah. I would say their toughest casting is going to be the character Brienne.
Yes, I agree.
So not a big spoiler, but it's a character who is a woman who is quite big.
Manish.
Very, very big, like even for a man.
Yeah. Maybe she's probably shorter than
and young.
Yeah, she's only about 18, isn't she?
Yeah.
And
quite ugly.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
So I was
and a very important character.
Yes. I was kind of joking before about how it's not an insult to pick an actress to play that role, but it's almost like, okay, you pick an actress, they read the book, and they're like, hold on, I'm an ugly freak! And you chose me to play this? Should I be honored or offended? So.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be a really hard part to cast. And also, I hadn't thought of this until just now, but are people going to like her in the second season if she's there? Because, I don't know if this is a spoiler, not a lot happens with her in the second season. In terms of knowing what kind of character
she's
going to
have a lot of scenes with Caitlin talking about stuff. She's going to be Caitlin's confidant.
Yeah.
So Caitlin's thinking stuff, she'll say it to Brienne. So that's what I think.
Well, the character
she might
is ugly.
She might help foil Tyrion's plan.
Maybe.
Too. I don't know. They might make that, and then they might just push all that to the beginning.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I was going to say the character Brienne is ugly. She's not that smart.
Yeah.
She's a good fighter, but I don't know. I'm just wondering. As we said before, old is ugly.
Yeah.
Right. So if you actually have someone who's, I'm not going to say ugly, but unattractive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really going to have to do something to make her a likable character, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What? I don't know.
Anyway. Well, they've managed to work in a lot of scenes with Jaime in season one that you wouldn't have thought, like with Jory Castle.
Oh.
It was just like.
But you know.
It was just funny. He's like, Jory kind of reminisces. And
I was going to say, what made it even funnier
is,
I think, before we watched that episode.
Yeah.
I was talking to you guys about how they haven't done anything with Theon.
Yeah.
Are people going to know who he is? We haven't heard anything about Greyjoy's rebellion and why he's a ward of Eddard Stark. Yeah. Then you watch episode 3 and it's like, hey, remember that time on Pike and Greyjoy's rebellion? Have some more Pike. How about some more Pike? Pike, Pike, Pike. It's like every other word out of their mouth is Pike.
Yeah.
And what happened. So, I don't know.
It was one of those. It was kind of as if the writer's like, oh, we forgot to mention...
We forgot to do this, so we got to rectify that.
And we need a scene for Jaime, so why don't we have that Jory guy and Jaime reminisce, because, yeah, they did that.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because you know that he's going to be responsible for Jory's death.
Yeah. If you read the book, yeah, you know what's going to happen. So.
Yeah, well, if you've seen the series, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they actually stabs him in the eye in the series, in the TV series. But it's just, he's a real standoffish, and he goes, yeah, we fought together on Pike.
Right. And he's like, oh, Pike! Yeah, Jory! Is that you?
Jory Castle! Yeah. You did something with your hair,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the scar, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, it's
and then they ramble on.
Yeah, and then he does a 180.
Yeah, Jamie's like,
yeah, and why don't you
I'm
get
not
lost?
King's servant! Get lost!
I expected him to give Jory a quick wave when he rode up to Ned Stark. Hey! Ned, your wife's, captured my brother.
Hey, Jory.
Hey, Jory. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jory, Pike forever.
Yeah. Jory pulls out the little chain that says BFF and Jamie has the matching one.
So, yeah, I'm surprised he didn't pause before he stabbed him in the eye. He goes, I'd hate to do this to a Pike veteran. Just like a Pike.
So like an Iron Man almost took that eye. I'll finish the job. But I think it was because that was there because we were supposed to like Jory, and then we were supposed to kind of like be sorry or kind of like shocked when he died. But you didn't need it. Honestly, you didn't need it. There were other ways you could have done it. I mean, you could have given, you know, Jory some scenes with, like, Arya, which is actually kind of what happens in the book a little bit.
Yeah, or Ned.
Or
yeah.
Ned, or anyone else, you know.
But not...
Not...
Jaime.
Because, honestly...
I'm not even sure if Jory's of the age where he could be a veteran of Pike.
I don't know.
Like, Jorah fought in Pike. Yeah. Jaime would have been pretty young.
Yes. Jaime would have been, like, really young.
Yeah.
I think. Maybe he was there. I forget how old they're supposed to be, but...
Pike took place like 10 years before.
Mm.
Jory would have been, what, 8? Jory's only like 18 or 20.
Yeah, she's not that old.
He would have been a child. Remember me, the child? Yeah, I was wondering what... I guess he was a squire, but he's not really... It's not really the North Way. Anyway.
Could have actually been there.
That was kind of our take on the TV series. But one thing that we've been talking about on the forums is... wow, this is a gaming podcast. Is... How to make our D&D campaign to switch to a fantasy campaign. Perhaps Savage Worlds.
Yeah, nobody got that eye roll. All right.
Yeah. So basically with the revamp on the second tier, there was a request to make it more, Game of Thrones.
Right.
So Chris asked, who's running it, says, how do we make a fantasy or my fantasy campaign more Game of Thrones?
Right.
So some of the suggestions that we had was to give it history and stealing from well, our own episode giving, making history, but also just World of Darkness and Vampire and that, where each character has got like an impression of a, or each clan has a, has impressions of other clans.
Right.
And they're just like, you know, a couple lines.
Yeah.
And the idea was to kind of give each character, each player, impressions of different countries or different cities or different realms or even different races. Mm. Or the elves of the north, they are blah, 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 blah. And it's like, this is what people in Longblade's Peak think of the elves, or this is what they think of the hobbits of Shireton, or this is what they think of that. And instead of writing like paragraphs and paragraphs and reams, it's just to give them little...
Yeah, you write like two lines.
Little two lines. But also to have... Just to expand on that, but to have famous NPCs. So in a Game of Thrones, when you read it, and it's like even in the fourth book, Jaime meets somebody, he knows the guy.
Right.
But there's a couple paragraphs for the reader explaining who that is. Mm-hmm. And I think you can do that in a game. And basically, instead of meeting an NPC and it's like a blank slate.
Right.
So we met kind of the spy master.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But no one really knew who he was. But he kind of, but he's on the council and everything, so it's not like he's not supposed to be famous.
Right.
But we should have, maybe some of us could have been given impressions. We would have known a little bit about the guy. Maybe that's a, perhaps a bad example. Or the king. We know, we have impressions of the king. Or the prince. Because they're very famous.
Well, I was going to say, it might be a little bit more difficult to do that in like a D&D style fantasy campaign, because
if you go to a new place, a new realm, then yeah, everything should be new. But if you're kind
of what
based in that area, then you should have, like, for example, your character came from the kingdom of where, at least where one of the princesses came from.
Yeah.
So maybe perhaps you could have a little known about her.
Right.
You don't know her, but you know about her. She's your princess.
I would have heard about her.
Yeah.
I also probably would have had an impression or some kind of rumors or a feeling about the country that we ended up in, because it's a neighbor of the you know, the country my character was from. So I would have said, oh, you know, all Longblade Peakians, all the people from this place are whatever.
Right? Yeah.
So that's something to do.
Yeah.
So or I'll say if it's kind of like a standard adventuring troupe, give the players a chance to find out by the use of, you know, streetwise roles or knowledge roles or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can give them little, like, snippets of conversation they hear in the tavern so they can sort of build up a picture of, you know, these people that are running the country or people who would be famous in the place.
Yeah. Also make use of heraldry. Obviously, it's a very, what?
If you're going to use heraldry, make sure it's on the freaking surcoat of the people who are wearing it.
Yeah, so people can see it.
Don't just make the surcoats black.
And that's a nice visual to introduce to introduce different houses or different noble line, noble families, is really play that up. And I know, you know, some people don't have the heraldry skill, but sometimes, you know, there are some that are so famous that every, you kind of assume that everybody knows who this family is because of this.
Yeah.
And then you can even have their men at arms and that, or their knights, kind of have something similar, so you can identify the connections within the city or within the realm. Oh, he's allied with this person. Or this is, he's a bannerman of this guy.
Yeah. No,
you don't have to know.
Really good.
And the person's skill, perhaps, then, and it gives you a reason to take something like heraldry or knowledge of nobility that, you know, you would get that skill roll, and it'll give you even more information.
Yeah, I know I always keep coming back to mysteries, but if you do use heraldry, there's so much you could do with it. I mean, like, is that guy actually from that house? Hey, he's wearing that coat, or he's wearing that badge, but...
Well, look at what a Game of Thrones did, is where the stag had killed the direwolf when they found that.
Yeah.
And they're going, ooh, that's a bad omen. But if you're doing, if you're not making use of, because the stag is the Baratheon totem or sigil, and the direwolf is the Stark... And the Baratheon and the Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark are best friends.
Right.
So, yeah, that does, it is strange, at least. But if you don't have heraldry in that, you can't play with that.
What are you going to have to do? Like, two dead people? Wasn't he a friend of the king? And wasn't he a friend of the lord? They killed each other? Ooh, that's bad.
Yeah, you can play up. Or you can even, like, throw in something. We talked about the deer skinning scene that was added to the TV series. Or kind of taken... Perhaps, and as Chris said, it's probably to give it more, kind of a metaphor for he was basically getting under Jamie's skin, but he's also skinning a stag or a deer. Yeah. So he's also like basically cutting up the Baratheon house and that.
Yeah.
So there's things you can do with that. So make sure that the totems are kind of, or the sigils are
noticeable,
memorable. Yeah. And it of course that gives you just gives you one more thing that you can kind of drop.
I was going to say it might be one of those things like you as a game master have to drop a couple times, like you
absolutely
not cram down the player's throat, but you have to kind of call out, this is going to be important. Start paying attention to the sigils and colors and standards that the people are having. You might have to do it a couple times, but then after a relatively short time maybe, then the players are going to start taking note of who's wearing what and what colors are going on, and they'll start doing it on their own, and then you can just start playing a lot with
it. And that's another thing, is because, you know, said it before in a previous episode, is if you give your players a 30 pages of history and background to get to know your world, they're not going to read it. But if you give them like little bits, and they're kind of like they're responsible for that. Mm. Here's the main house from where you're from. This is what their symbol is. This is this is what they wear. These are their colors.
Here's and what then people think about it.
Yeah, and then that actually gives you an opportunity to kind of share that and to decide how much you want to share with the other players.
It's like,
oh, what is that? The lion? He's, oh, actually, he's from my realm or my city. Mm. That's those are the Tarians, and they are, and you have your little impression. Most people hate them, but I love them or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good. Yeah.
Give some depth. Another thing is what they have is like little orders. And I think what Martin did with the Maesters is fantastic. And it's given it such a flavor.
Mm.
There's the crows that they're using for messengers.
Yep.
And that they're kind of this order. There's the Kingsguard. It's a different order with different vows. There's the Night's Watch.
Yep.
And
then there's the religious
and all
as well.
Of them. Yeah. And I think D&D, default D&D probably does really well with religious orders. You got your clerics, you got your paladins, you got the monks. Where are they from? I don't know.
Right.
But make use of that. Like, who? And you think, well, what are the maesters doing? Who are they? They're basically your doctors. Mm. They're your messenger people. They're your counselors.
Scientists.
The scientists. And he's basically lumped it into an order. And I know fantasy, default fantasy does do guilds a lot.
Mm.
But think about what you could do with that. And also ask yourself, how do people communicate?
Yeah.
Because you could actually drop something like the crows in Game of Thrones that gives your setting that not unique necessarily, but a distinct flavor.
Makes
from
it special.
Yeah. So you're not saying it's a vanilla fantasy thing. It is not, man. The crows. Mm-hmm. It's got crows that you're using as messengers, which is really just carrier pigeons.
Yeah.
And he's made them crows.
You can do that with anything, really.
Yeah.
So like it flies. Any kind of flying animal.
The bees. You have to write really small.
I guess.
It'll be a while before you get there.
I mean, how many bees?
The Canadian geese said you can only
go one way.
Only during migration season. All right, I got a lot to say. Tag it on each one.
What?
Oh, especially with the seasons, man. I'll talk to you in 10 years when winter is finished.
Yeah.
I think also that Martin did a really good job with the fantastic castles. And we just talked about that this episode and how much we're going to look forward to seeing like Pike.
Yeah.
Because it looks, the description is so incredible.
Yeah.
It's like all broken up on, it's on different rocks going out into the
rope bridges. Yeah.
Yeah. And have that.
Mm.
And I was like, even watching Excalibur, John Borman and the production designer, they really did a lot with that, like, where the Cornwall castle, which becomes like the bad guys, is very dark and foreboding. And then Camelot, he actually looks like made of silver. So on the one hand, you can say that looks ridiculous. But on the other hand, it gets like, wow, that's
a good castle.
Not a good castle. Yeah, it's the good castle.
Yeah, the good castle.
Not a good
castle. Yeah, not a good castle. The good castle.
Right. And finally, the complex relationships. So.
Like, you had a good idea with that.
Well, anybody who's played Vampire can see where they have like character relationship map.
Yeah.
Where you basically, a web. And you basically just write, who are all the major NPCs? What are their relationships with each other? How do they feel about each other?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I know I did that when I was doing my Vampire game. And I had to introduce a new NPC because we had a new player joining.
Hmm.
And then we made a, like, his sire.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to fit in his sire into
this web.
Into this web. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll make a new strand. And I thought, that's too complex for what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So then I just incorporated it into an existing strand. And he was part of that. And then using that to help give the connection, or the players a connection to that strand, because they hadn't kind of found their way to it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd only heard about this other guy.
I think that's an important thing to do if you're doing an intrigue game as well. Because then you can figure out, it'll be an easy way to know who's pulling whose strings and how they feel about this person and what kind of reaction would be when plans get foiled or not. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. See you later.
All right. Check us out on the forums.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
www.idleredhands.com. You know, and, probably better if one of us said it.
Yeah. Anyway, they've heard it on all the other ones. They know where to go. So, hopefully.
All right. And we'll be back with Chris next time.
Yep. So.
And that's guaranteed.
See you later.
Bye.
Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.